Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 348 of the podcast, unless you're joining live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Today is Monday, February 12th. One day removed from the Super Bowl, 2 days removed from UFC Vegas 86, and 2 days away from Valentine's Day. So a very happy Valentine's Day to all of you out there who participate. And if you don't have a Valentine this year, then I don't know. You're probably better off. In any case, congratulations to Kansas City Chiefs winning the Super Bowl. I didn't care. I wound up watching the game by accident. We had some friends who had us over for like the first pool party of the year, because it's pool season again here in Florida. They turn the heat on in their pool, and kids went swimming, and I brought over some wings and some jalapeno poppers. You guys might have seen the recipe I posted on social media for the bacon-wrapped jalapeno poppers. And the people whose house we went to, they happen to be Chiefs fans, so they put the game on, and I wound up watching the first half there. And then when I got home, my wife and daughter fell asleep, and I just watched the rest of the game while I was doing some other stuff. But it was a good game. It was close. You know, went into overtime, and the Chiefs win 2 years in a row, I guess. So congratulations to them. I guess they have a good team. Matt the Mechanic is here. He says, update, he lost 46 cents this week, but he's still at plus $1.41 on the year. That's great news. We're like a quarter of the way to a happy meal. So what else? I'm not gonna bore you guys talking about the Super Bowl, because I barely know what happened. I was hardly paying attention. So Chiefs won, the end. Taylor Swift was there. There you go. There's my football recap. Let's see. UFC, it was an early card on Saturday, I guess, because there was a lot of, I didn't realize the Super Bowl was in Las Vegas. So I guess they had a lot of stuff going on, a lot of media and things. So it was an earlier card, which was nice. Let's start the main event. So we did the breakdown. We did our picks and pours on Thursday. Matt went with Joe Pyfer. You know, Pyfer's got a lot of hype behind him. He was just on the Joe Rogan podcast, which, you know, it doesn't get much bigger than that in terms of exposure. My only concern with picking Joe Pyfer was that this was going to be a 5-round fight, and that Jack Hermanson has been in there with the who's who of the middleweight division. And Joe Pyfer hasn't been in there with that level of competition yet. So experience prevailed here. You know, Pyfer was throwing everything in the kitchen sink at Jack Hermanson for the first two rounds. And I don't know if he punched himself out or if he had an adrenaline dump, but the tide started to turn in the third round. I think when Hermanson landed a nice jab to the eye of Joe Pyfer, and Pyfer was claiming it was an eye poke, and credit to the referee, Mark Smith, saw it. It was clearly a punch that Hermanson just stuck right in the eye of Joe Pyfer. And that's really what turned the tide of the fight. After that, it was all calf kicks and jabs from Hermanson. Got him down a couple of times. Really just excellent fight IQ, excellent game planning. He knew exactly what he had to do. He had to weather the storm in the beginning from this guy, this hard-hitting ginger, Joe Pyfer, who broke the record, broke Francis Ngannou's record on the punchometer thing at the UFC Apex. So we know the guy hits hard. Now, having that power doesn't necessarily translate well into the octagon. You know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, he did land some big shots on Jack. You know, Jack showed his chin in this fight. He showed his resilience, but most of all, like I said, he showed his experience, and that's what won him to fight. He was crafty in there. He weathered the storm and pulled out the victory, unanimous decision. I do think the third round was the closest. You know, obviously Pfeiffer won the first and the second, and Jack won the fourth and the fifth. I think he won the third as well, but it was definitely the closest round, the with the most gray area, I would say. And here's another one, and I believe Matt owes me for this one, because this is one that I actually spoke up about disagreeing with him on, and that's Dan Ige and Andre Feely. So Matt went with Feely, and I said that from a betting perspective, I would go with Dan Ige just because he's consistent. You know what you're going to get every time. Andre Feely, you don't know if you're going to get a knockout artist in there or a guy who's just going to take a flop. But man, it was the timing and the power of Dan Ige that resulted in this punch. He kind of like waited on the lazy jab of Andre Feely and used that as an opportunity to come over the top and put his lights out, gave him one extra one on the ground for good measure. Apparently these guys were buddies beforehand. They've trained together, and training is different than fighting. When you're training together, you're not showing all your cards, at least you shouldn't be. And you're taking care of your training partners. So you're never really throwing full force, even when you're going hard. You know, you're not really trying to hurt each other. You know, you're trying to let each other know, like, hey, I got the better of you in this exchange, but not necessarily, you know, put somebody unconscious. Not if you're someone who cares about the people you train with, which you should, because if you're always hurting your training partners, then guess what? You got nobody to train with, and you're a piece of shit, and nobody will want to train with you. So Dan Ige let Feely know that, you know, he had a little extra in the chamber than what he had seen. So maybe Feely wasn't expecting all that power based on the experience they had trained together. But Dan Ige, man, he's a little powerhouse. And he's got great striking. Everything keeps everything nice and tight. Here Matt admits it was a rare occasion that he should have listened to me. Well, cost you big time, man. Cost you hundreds of cents. I'm actually going to get through this card pretty quick here. We'll take a quick peek at UFC 299, even though we're going to go more in depth on Thursday. I'm drinking a seltzer here. One, because it's Monday, and you know, I had a couple of drinks watching the game last night, so I don't really need any more alcohol, and it's a weeknight. And also I have to go to the airport to pick up my parents. They're flying in. My daughter and her kindergarten class are doing a grandparents concert tomorrow night for Valentine's Day. Going to be super adorable, I'm sure. So my parents are flying in for the occasion. My in-laws will be attending as well, and it'll be a good time. I don't know what's going on with my web browser right here. I'm having some technical difficulties, folks, so just bear with me. All right. Ihor Batoria getting unanimous decision over Robert Bryzicek. So Bryzicek was, this was another kind of a comeback fight where Bryzicek was unloading early on in the fight, and Poterio had to come back. So Poterio, from what I understand, missed weight. However, he took this fight on short notice and down a weight class from where he had normally been fighting. So I guess he normally fights 205. He took this down a weight class and on short notice. So 188-pound catch weight. We won't beat him up too much for missing the weight. I mean, granted, he still did sign a contract to fight at a certain weight and didn't make it. But I guess under the circumstances, we can give him a pass. Let's see, Gregory Rodriguez, big knockout win over Brad Tavares. Gregory Rodriguez hits hard, man. I just wish he would move his head a little bit more. As a striking coach, it's very concerning to me when I see a guy in there who's throwing so heavy and not getting his head off the center line at all. You know, I guess it's working for him so far. You can't argue with the results. Standing TKO over Brad Tavares, who's a tough dude. I mean, that guy has a hard-ass head. So a TKO over him is a big deal for sure. So credit to RoboCop there. Let me just pull up real quick what his record has looked like lately. We talked about this last week on Picks and Pours. This guy looks like he's 40-something, but apparently he's 31. But I think they fudge those birth certificates in Brazil sometimes. All right. So he's got two wins in a row. He had that knockout loss to Bruno Fadea back in January of last year. But other than that, man, he's knocking out everybody. Knocked out Julian Marquez, knocked out Chidi Njikiwani, knocked out Dennis Tallulah. You know, far be it from me to criticize this guy's striking and head movement. Obviously, can't argue with results. The man can crack, and that's all that seems to matter lately. All right, Michael Johnson, impressive performance over Darius Flowers. So he had a hard time with Flowers in the beginning. He had a hard time dealing with the teep kicks. But once he started working the body and working in his wrestling, Michael Johnson just ran away with this fight. I don't know if you guys remember this, but coming off the Ultimate Fighter, Michael Johnson was strictly a wrestler. He would just take everybody down. And he always had fast hands, but at some point in his career, he developed a little bit of power to go with it, and he kind of fell in love with that. And at 37 years old, wrestling is a lot of work. It just drains you, you know? And I can speak to this because I occasionally coach wrestling at the jiu-jitsu gym where I go. Gracie Baja Clearwater, shout out to John Keller, fantastic gym owner and Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. So I occasionally teach wrestling classes. I'll actually be teaching this Friday. This Friday afternoon, I guess. And so a lot of the guys, they see me teaching the wrestling class and they want to start standing with me. And, you know, which is great. You know, they want to test their stand up and try out their wrestling and stuff. But I've been doing this shit a long time, man. I have the knowledge to teach wrestling, but the body doesn't necessarily want to keep up with it too much anymore. So I just kind of let them work and counter wrestle and do what I have to do. But the point I was getting at is, you know, wrestling is exhausting. So even for someone like Michael Johnson, who was a much higher level wrestler than myself, and is a couple of years younger than myself as well, he doesn't want to be doing that shit anymore, but he did what he had to do to get his hand raised. He even told, Daniel Cormier after the fight, he's like, man, that's enough of this wrestling shit. It's too tiring. But, yeah, once he found his rhythm, started working the body of Darius Flowers, and then making him guess as to whether or not the body shots were going to come because he was hurting him to the body, he was able to mix in those takedowns, and the takedowns were coming easier and easier as the fight went on. Almost got caught in a triangle there, I think, maybe the end of the second round, I want to say. Was in a little bit of trouble, but not really. And that was basically the most of a fight that Darius Flowers put up after the first round. So credit to Michael Johnson, man, still doing it in there. And you know, that this is another example of just experience prevailing. You know, he was having some frustration on the feet, and he had to go back to his bread and butter, go back to his wrestling roots, and wound up getting the victory over a tough young guy in Darius Flowers, who, you know, the other reason he was having success early in the fight was he's got like an awkward stance. So he's got like kind of a karate stance, and he throws the teep kicks a little oddly. So Michael Johnson was having a hard time picking up on the rhythm, but wound up picking him apart by the end of it. All right, Rodolfo Vieira over Armin Petrosian. Nobody really surprised by this one, right? We knew if it got to the ground, it would be all Vieira. I mean, he's one of the most decorated Brazilian jiu-jitsu athletes on the roster. He looks like he's leaned out a little bit. Looked a lot more shredded. Still carries a lot of muscle, but not nearly as bloated looking in the muscles as he was when he started his UFC career. And now he's on track for some records, I think, because he's got a bunch of submissions in this middleweight division. I think nine submission wins in the UFC. Oh no, that might be overall. Okay, yeah, he's got 9 submission wins overall, not in the UFC. Sorry, I didn't mean to misspeak there. So he got Petrosian down once, and Petrosian got back up, got him down again, and just got to that head and arm position. And this guy must just have a next level squeeze, you know? And that arm triangle choke is not necessarily a squeezing choke. I remember one of my first jiu-jitsu instructors told me that choke should be slow. It should be like letting the air out of a tire, and you shouldn't have to be squeezing the head and the arm. But it sure looked like Rodolfo Vieira was squeezing the shit out of Armin Petrosian's head. Petrosian was starting to go unconscious, gave a quick little tap, and then tried to say that he didn't tap. Again, Mark Smith, great job as the referee in there. Identified the tap. And, you know, I don't think Petrosian was trying to cheat or anything. I think he was starting to go unconscious. And then, you know, when they let go of the choke and all the blood starts rushing back to your head, you're like, hey, what's going on? I was fine. But really, you were, you know, grasping at straws. I think it was a good stoppage by Mark Smith. It was definitely a tap. He was definitely going to go unconscious, probably saved him a few brain cells. You know, the old school mentality is that going unconscious doesn't do any damage. You know, you just go to sleep for a second, you wake back up. But there's been no like scientific studies on this, right? We don't know the real answer in terms of what kind of long-term issues it can cause if you're constantly being put to sleep. I mean, I guess now and then is fine, but it can't be good for you to be depriving your brain of blood and oxygen on a regular basis. So again, credit to Mark Smith there. Good stoppage. Another comeback fight. So Carlos, I want to say Prates, gets a knockout over Trevin Giles. And up to this point when the fight ended, Trevin Giles was whipping the shit out of Carlos. I mean, he had some really clean boxing, and he was just beating the brakes off of him. Prates making his UFC debut against a guy, you know, who's been around the block a few times, and Trevin Giles. I don't know, man. I don't know if it was nerves or whatever, but yeah, he got tagged up. His face was looking pretty battered. And then he lands one big punch at the end of the second round and ends the fight. And that's why we love this sport, right? Because the tides can turn at any moment. There's a lot like that Super Bowl match. Foosball. Let's see. What else do I want to get into here? Balaji Oki split decision over Timothy Kuamba. Didn't see that one. Lumaluk Bumi, unanimous decision over Bruno Brasil. So it was the striking of Luke Bumi here, the Muay Thai that prevailed. Bruno tried to get some takedowns later on, but it was too little too late. Great back and forth fight was Marcin Pracneo and Devin Clark. These guys are getting after it. Both of them emptied the tank. Fantastic fight. That one was. Max Griffin split decision over Jeremiah Wells. And then Bogdan Guzkov, the guy who looks like he took a picture with Anthony Smith after the fact, and it was the best picture out of the whole event. I had said last week on Picks and Pours, he looks like a combination of Anthony Smith and Fedor. He gets it done. First round knockout over Zach Piuga. So this guy's going to be a problem at light heavyweight. And then Haider Amil, TKO over Fernie Garcia. And then I don't know what happened in this first fight, but it was a no contest between Daniel Marcos and Keelang Aori. It says no contest, accidental groin strike. So somebody got hit in the nuts so hard that it ended the fight. Whoever that guy was, he had a worse night than the 49ers did the next day. All right. Let's look at UFC 299 real quick here. Man, I'm just burning through this episode tonight. Sorry, guys. I got like, I guess a little extra energy and I don't know. I'm not going as in-depth as usual maybe, but we're cruising right along. So I'll save you guys some time. All right. So, UFC 298. So this is going to be at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California. Alexander Volkanovski and Ilya Topuria. So I guess Topuria had made some comments that Volk is too old to beat him. And Volkanovski responded in the most hilarious way, put out this video of him just acting like an old man. I'm not going to do it any justice. You got to go to his social media and watch that if you haven't seen it. The joke is basically, I don't know what they're talking about. They're saying I'm too old for this. And then he's like chasing people off his lawn and fussing with his TV antenna and just doing a bunch of old man shit. And it's pretty funny. Folks got a good sense of humor. So, man, this is a great fight, right? And I'm glad Volk didn't take it in January like he said he was going to right after the Islam fight. So he suffered a bad knockout in that Islam fight, and that was still only in October. If it were my fighter, I would want him to not fight for 6 months after a knockout like that, minimum. Minimum. I wouldn't want him sparring hard for a while, probably like 2-3 months. And even then, I would be handpicking his sparring partners for a while to make sure he doesn't get hurt. However, I have never coached a world champion. So there's the devil's advocate to my strategy. I mean, Volk is a tough son of a bitch, man. If anybody can turn around this quick after a bad knockout, it's him. But I would be concerned as a coach getting back in there even this soon after a knockout like that, after a head kick knockout. and then dropping back down to 145 pounds. So, and Teporia is dangerous, man. The kid's good everywhere. He's vicious. He's mean. He's got great grappling. His striking is tight. How's his cardio going to hold up, though? A five-round fight with Volkanovski, who just hits the gas the whole time. You know, we've saw him go five rounds in his last fight against Josh Emmett. And he looked good there. But Josh Emmett, as great of a fighter as he's not as well-rounded as Volkanovski. And Josh Emmett doesn't push the pace the way Volkanovski will. You know, Josh Emmett is more of a counter striker, let you come to him so he can land big shots kind of fighter. And, you know, if you look at his record, I mean, the kid's finishing everybody. Finished Damon Jackson, finished Ryan Hall, finished Jai Herbert, finished Bryce Mitchell. Decision with Josh Emmett, but, you know, a dominant one. So my concern for Teporia is it too soon for him to be in there with Volkanovski? Maybe he should get one or two more against, you know, higher level competition. And my concern for Volkanovski is maybe he should have taken a little more time off after that knockout. But again, I'm not a championship coach, so it's not my call. These guys know what they're capable of, and their coaches know what they're capable of. So here we are. I think it's an awesome fight. I'm excited for it. So here we go. Co-main event. If it happens, Robert Whittaker and Paulo Costa. I say if it happens because Paulo Costa has just been pulling out left and right. I don't know. Robert Whittaker says he wasn't himself in the Dricus du Plessis fight. So, I mean, I'll take him at his word there. You know, if he says he wasn't feeling right, he wasn't feeling right. Whitaker's another guy. He's been around so long. He's only 33, right? And pretty much the only middleweights he's lost to have been champions. It's Adesanya and Dricus du Plessis. That's it. Costa is a little bit more hit or miss. I mean, first of all, he's got to make it to the fight. So let's hope that happens. Obviously, he's a monster. He's got big power. He's strong. But, you know, Whitaker's been in there with Yoel Romero. It doesn't get much more monstrous and strong than that. So if he could deal with that, skill for skill, I don't see him having a problem with Paulo Costa. But, you know, Costa is one of these guys who can just blitz people and make things happen. So that makes it an interesting matchup for the co-main event. Finally, we're getting Jeff Neal and Ian Garry. So I guess Ian Garry's been able to weather the storm of all the drama that happened with his wife and, you know, going into that last card when he was supposed to fight Vicente Luque and he had to pull out because he had the flu or whatever it was, probably in his best interest. So he didn't have to endure, press conferences with Colby Covington, who was in the main event of that card. So now he's back. Him and Jeff Neal have a history. They were supposed to fight back in the day, and Ian Garry did something where Jeff Neal had gotten like a DUI, I guess before he was in the UFC. So Ian Garry had taken his mugshot and made a t-shirt out of it, was selling those t-shirts on his website. And Jeff Neal is not like a trash talker. He's not like one of these guys that gets into that sort of thing. He just kind of, you know, he grabs his lunch pail and goes to work. But he was upset by that. You know, he said there was There was no reason for Ian Garry to do that kind of stuff. It was kind of tasteless. And that kind of it kind of raises the argument, like, does Ian Garry deserve, you know, all the heat that's coming towards him and his family for his, you know, his wife's book and whatever else? You know, I don't think anybody deserves to have their family brought into it, but, you know, if you're going to put heat on guys, you got to expect it to come back in your direction. I think you're naive if you don't think it's going to, but I think he's pretty safe here. Jeff Neal is not going to pull any PR stunts going into this fight. He's just going to show up to fight. So all that aside, I think it's an interesting matchup. They're both really good strikers. You know, Ian Garry's a little more dynamic, a little more explosive. Jeff Neal is a little bit more conservative, but still great power, great control. It's an interesting one. This is a great card. Man, top to bottom, this is an awesome card. I'm really looking forward to this. So we have Merab Dvalishvili against Henry Cejudo. I'm so excited for this fight. The only way I would be more excited for it is if it was five rounds. Obviously, two fantastic wrestlers, two guys who have, you know, very different backgrounds in wrestling. And you have a guy in Henry Cejudo who won an Olympic gold medal, if you haven't heard. Fantastic wrestler, spectacular technique. Doesn't use it a lot. You know, he's another guy who fell in love with the boxing, fell in love with his hands. Whereas Merab doesn't have as developed of a wrestling background, but he uses the fuck out of his wrestling. I think he's broken every takedown record, like most takedowns in a fight, most takedowns in a round, most takedowns in the bantamweight division. He is just relentless. So, you know, will he be able to get Henry down? Because, you know, he's going to try. And he's probably not going to be able to on the first couple attempts. But, you know, will Henry be able to keep up with the pace? You know, we know he has the skills in the wrestling. There's no denying that. But it's going to be a question of, can he handle the pace of Merab? Because nobody's been able to lately. This guy is a fucking animal in there. He just does not stop. He just, you know, he smells blood in the water as soon as he gets in there, and he's just all over people. Now, the X factor for Cejudo is he's got the knockout power. You know, Merab's striking has gotten a lot better. He's definitely much improved since coming into the UFC. But Cejudo's boxing is much better, much cleaner, and he definitely hits harder. So he's going to have that going for him. When it comes to submissions, neither one of these guys are submission guys. I wouldn't see this fight ending in a submission unless somebody just gets tired. Just neither one of them have a submission game. So nothing to worry about there. Anthony Hernandez and Roman Kopylov, that's an exciting middleweight fight. Kopylov is just like a quiet killer, man. This kid is going to be really good one day. I mean, he's really good now, but I think he's going to be more well-known. Four knockout wins in a row in the UFC. He had a little bit of a shaky start when he came into the UFC, two losses in a row, but man, this kid's found his rhythm. I keep calling him a kid. He's 32 years old, but he's got crazy power and very technical striking. And then Fluffy Hernandez is, you know, he's on quite a streak himself. He's also on a four-fight winning streak. He had that win over Rodolfo Vieira, where Vieira just gassed out and he was able to submit him with a guillotine. And then in his most recent fight, he had a TKO win over Edmund Shahbazyan. So this is a fun fight. This is my sleeper fight of the card. Anthony Hernandez and Roman Kopylov. Roman Kopylov. I hadn't given you guys a sleeper pick in a while, so there's that. All right. Amanda Lemos and Mackenzie Dern. Interesting fight here. Okay. Mackenzie's coming off that loss, right? Yeah, she's coming off the TKO loss to Jessica Andrade. So we'll see how she bounces back from that. And Amanda Lemos is coming off the loss to Weili Zhang. So another interesting fight here. Marcos Rogério de Lima and Justin Taffa. How about this fight for a prelim fight? Somebody's getting knocked out in this one. I can guarantee that. I don't know. Flip a coin as to who it is, but and then I'll just skip to the bottom. Andrea KGB Lee against Miranda Maverick. That's the opening fight, and that's a really good fight. Then we got some lesser known guys in here, but you know, some welterweights and a light heavyweight matchup. A few undefeated fighters. So this is going to be an awesome card. I'm really excited for this pay-per-view, actually. So we'll see what happens. But there's some great fights on here. Great fights. All right, guys. I'm going to cut it short tonight. If you want to grab some MMA on the Rocks merchandise, Reaper1.co is the website. You use the promo code MMARocks10. Also, if you want to grab your Magic Mind productivity shots, my promo code will be good, I believe, through the end of the week. So you have a few more days if you want to grab some Magic Mind. All natural ingredients. It's got matcha to boost your energy. And it's got nootropics for focus. So it's great for content creators like myself who need to focus on filming content and editing content and editing podcasts and posting clips and social media and all the work that goes into this stuff. Magic Mind is a big help. So you can use the link in the show notes and use my promo code MMARocks20, because if you just go on their website and put in your email address, they give you 15% off your first order. But with my promo code, you get 20% off. So grab yourself some Magic Mind, find your flow state. And that'll about do it. I'll be back Thursday night with Matt the Mechanic. We'll go over some picks for UFC 298. We'll get into some more news. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about Henry Cejudo firing his coach. We'll touch on that a little bit more. And we'll get into the fact that there was no announcement during the Super Bowl for the main event of UFC 300. We'll get into all that and more. And Matt's going to have to take some disgusting shots on Thursday. So tune in for that. Until next time, cheers, everybody. Bye.